Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Wednesday, May 22nd, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we are going to gather around the virtual water cooler and talk about what we've been up to. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor Brad Owen.
Hey, that's me.
All right, Brad, let's get into it. What have you been doing recently?
Well, last week, I went down to Indianapolis to the Sweets and Snacks Expo. This is an event that I went to for the first time last year when it was in Chicago. But last year was apparently the last time it would be in Chicago because it's now moved to Indianapolis. And apparently it's going to go back and forth between Indy and Las Vegas, at least for a little while, for the next few years. So since it still wasn't too far away from me, I took some time to go down there and check it out. So if you haven't heard about this before, and it's the first time you're hearing about it, the Sweets and Snacks Expo is this industry event where all the various companies that put out basically all of the like cookies, crackers, chips, gum, all manners of sweets and snacks come together for this industry show where they show off their latest products, have a bunch of samples of current and upcoming products, and just like mingle and talk to other manufacturers and basically all the different companies that are involved in creating and distributing snacks. Now, it's not open to the public, but because I run my Brad's Junk Instagram page at Look at Brad's Junk, if you want to check it out, I was able to apply as media and go and basically, you know, cover it as if it were like Comic-Con, you know, because this is basically like snack Comic-Con.
So is there the equivalent of a Hall H and like presentations, or is it just the show floor?
So there are panels and presentations and stuff like that, but like it's not the kind of thing where like, you know, you go and see Oh man, Kellogg's has a great panel over in Hall H, and they have a trailer for their new cornflakes. It's for someone like me, it's mostly checking out the show floor and seeing what new products they have like on display that they've announced that they have samples of. And if you're there, like you get a bag where that you can just load up with free stuff. So like I came home with a bag just full of free treats and things like that. So it's a lot of fun. It's really cool. And so like I went and I tried to connect, you know, with some of the companies that I don't have a like PR relationship with yet. And so, you know, to get like on their press release list and get heads up about new products instead of, you know, finding stuff in stores or hearing about it from like other, you know, snack influencers and stuff like that. But it's a lot of fun. You know, there's cool things to try on the show floor. And like they have people in like their full mascot costumes. And a lot of the bigger companies have like elaborate booths, like the Mendelez company who owns like Oreo and stuff like that. Like they had a bunch of big photo ops with like giant Oreo cookies and like an Oreo throne and stuff like that. So it's pretty cool.
Okay, so what was your maybe like top one, two, or three things that you tried there or heard about?
So one of the things that I was surprised to see that I liked a lot was I'm a big fan of taco flavored Doritos. Have you had the taco Doritos?
I don't think so. No.
So they can be a little harder to find, but if you can find them, I think that they're worth it. They don't like taste like a taco in the way that like they try and like make like a chip taste like a cheeseburger, where like it has like a vague, you know, flavor of different ingredients in it. Like it's just kind of taco seasoning that's on it, basically. And it's probably my favorite Dorito, to be honest. And so Jack Link's teamed up with Doritos to do a Doritos tacos flavored beef jerky and beef stick. And the beef stick, I was actually pretty impressed by. It had a really great taco seasoning flavor to it. And that was really good. And then I'm trying to think what else there was that was really good. Surprisingly enough, like, I feel like some of my favorite stuff was like the beef jerky stuff. Cause they also have, they have something that's coming out in 2025. It's called Duos, where it has basically two different flavors combined, into one. And they had like a mango jalapeno one. They had a regular and teriyaki one and a buffalo and ranch one, and so that was pretty cool. But then, like, one of the things that I got to try, and this was great because sometimes there are snacks that are like regional that take a while to like get around to certain areas, and right now their Magnolia Bakery has who is very well known for their cupcakes and for their banana pudding, and they have a line of banana pudding flavored cookies that are out. And I've been looking for these, but I haven't been able to find them. I actually found out from being on the show floor after talking to people from their company that right now they're prominently only available on the West Coast, and they haven't made their way to the Midwest or East Coast yet. So they had samples of those, so I was able to try them. And like, the cookies are awesome because they're soft baked and they have different flavors. They have chocolate chip, vanilla, and confetti. But the flavor of the cookie itself also tastes like their banana pudding. So it's this really great flavor combination that I was really excited to finally get to try.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, yeah. So can people just go to your Instagram account to see a bunch of photos and stuff from?
Yeah.
From
so I'm kind of slow rolling the content because like there are literally so many new things. If I were to post all of the stuff, like immediately as I found it out, I would be posting like 20 to 30 things a day, essentially. Yeah. And a lot of this stuff doesn't come out until later in the year or even into 2025. So it's basically just like a tease of like, hey, this is coming. And so if you go to look at Brad's Junk on Instagram, occasionally, like throughout each day when I post stuff, a couple of the things I post will be about things I saw and tried at the Sweets and Snacks Expo, in addition to the stuff that like I typically see in grocery stores and stuff like that.
Okay, cool. Let's get into what we've been reading. I read a book called My Escape from Venice's Prison, which is written by Giacomo Casanova. When my wife and I went to Italy in 2022, we went to Venice and we took a tour of a building called the Doge's Palace, which is this famous building just off the water that was the living quarters of the leader of Venice back in the day. I think it was built in like the 1300s, and it had all sorts of different rooms and stuff in it for different things. There were like Senate chambers and a section where court cases were sort of handled and dealt with, and like apartments, but there's also a prison there. And on a tour, they showed us where Casanova, the sort of famed libertine and famous lover, was kept, where he was imprisoned there in the 1750s. And they told us all about his escape from this prison. And so when we went to this local bookstore, we found an English copy of a book called My Escape from Venice's Prison that was written by Casanova himself. So I just got around to reading this book. It's very short. It was published in 1788, and I'll read you the little description here that I found online, because this book, like the version that I got, is just like very, very bare bones. It doesn't really have a lot of like blurbs or anything like that, but I found a description of it here. So it goes like this: Europe's greatest adventurer thrown into an escape-proof prison for a crime he probably committed. The question is, which crime? In 1755, the infamous Giacomo Casanova was locked up without trial in Venice's notorious Leads prison. Only over 15 months, he battled disease, madness, boredom, grotesque jailers, bad books, and fellow prisoners before attempting the most audacious and typically flamboyant escape in history. So, I thought because I was there and sort of saw these places in the flesh that I would have a really good idea of like the geography that he's talking about and like sort of tracking, every step of his escape along the way. And I don't know if it's just like a failing of my part as a reader or what, but I, there are several points in this book where I'm like, I don't really know what you're talking about, dude. Like, I can't sure exactly what you mean. And I don't know. I think maybe it almost hurt me by being there because I have like the real landscape and the real architecture in my head. And I was just like, I couldn't square the two things exactly. So anyway, I you know, the book was fine. I think the most interesting thing about it was because, or was the fact that it talks so much about this jailbreak that I feel like it has to be an influence on practically any prison break story that's been written since then. Like I thought a lot about The Count of Monte Cristo and Shawshank Redemption and things like that. Because this book was published so long ago, it just seems like it must have had an influence on people. And some of the actual parts of the escape where he details like chipping away, you know, like hiding under his bed basically and chipping away and creating tunnels in the walls and all that kind of stuff. So like some of that imagery we've obviously seen in movies and TV and stuff since then. So yeah, I would say it was like an interesting read. It just kind of ends. I wasn't a fan of the end of the book. So, you know, kind of a mixed review, I guess. But yeah, if you're interested in that, then you can check that out. And I'll talk a little bit more about Casanova in a minute. But Brad, what have you been reading?
I read The Art and Soul of Dune Part 2, which is the making of book about the making of Dune Part 2, funnily enough, in case you didn't get that. And so it's just another one of those, you know, the usual art books that cinephiles like you and me like to check out that digs into exactly how the movie was made and has beautiful pages of concept art showing off things like that. This one's written by Tanya Lapointe and Stephanie Bruce, and I enjoyed reading this simply just digging into like Denis Villeneuve's thought process and like the things he wanted to capture with this movie and how it evolved from the first Dune and things they, you know, wanted to change and enhance and make bigger. The most fascinating stuff in the book is definitely them breaking down how they did the sandworm ride for Paul Atreides, first sandworm ride, that there's a really in-depth explanation of exactly the practical effects they used to pull it off and like why Denny wanted to shoot it the way he did and whatnot. But the one thing I was a little disappointed with is I really like when there's a lot of like anecdotes and stories about like things that like happen on set or more details about the actual production process. And this felt like it was a little more surface level. Like there was some stuff with Greg Fraser, who you recently talked to, the cinematographer of Dune 2, talking about how they shot certain things, especially with like the infrared cameras and whatnot. But like it's like it wasn't nearly as in-depth like the Oppenheimer book for me, the one about Christopher Nolan's movie, was a really great companion to the movie because it really, you got a lot of perspective from the actors and the filmmakers and the crew and stuff like that. And this didn't really have a lot of stuff from people like Timothée Chalamet or Zendaya or anything like that. I don't know if it's because of a lack of access or what it was, but it's mostly production based, but with not the level of insight that I would have liked, especially for a movie like Dune. So it's still interesting enough, but like I have read better art books, and so I walked away like a little bit disappointed because of it.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's called The Art and Soul of Dune Part 2, if you want to check that out. Let's get into what we've been watching. So after I read this Casanova book, I was like, I remembered there being a Casanova movie from the early 2000s, and it actually came out in 2005. And the movie is just called Casanova, and it stars Heath Ledger. And I'd never seen it before. And I was like, all right, maybe I can help sort of bridge the gap of my brain and help like visualize some of the stuff that I was having trouble picturing from this book by watching this movie. It turns out the movie Casanova has absolutely nothing to do with his prison escape. So joke's on me, I guess. Whoops. I should have looked that up beforehand. But did you ever see this movie when it came out back in the day?
I didn't.
Okay. It's okay. You know, like it came out in 2005. I think it feels like more like a late 90s release in terms of how it treats its characters. It's one of those movies that has like six main characters, three men and three women. And there are all these permutations of like stolen identities and romantic deception and stuff between them. And by the end of the movie, they all end up neatly paired off because the writers presumably just like felt like everything needed to be tied up with a bow. You know, it's just like too clean for real life. It just feels a little, I don't know, sanitized and kind of, just like a sort of ultra clean type of period piece. I will say the cast was pretty enjoyable though. Like Jeremy Irons and especially Oliver Platt they're playing supporting roles, and they're not just chewing the scenery. They're like chomping it in the scenes that they're in. So they were clearly having some fun. And I was reminded, of course, yet again, of like how much I just miss Heath Ledger as a performer. He actually seemed to start out kind of phoning it in a little bit at the beginning mm-hmm. of this movie, but eventually he builds up a nice little spark of energy as the film goes on. And then also there's a young Charlie Cox and Natalie Dormer who are in this too. So that was fun to see.
Okay. Okay.
But yeah, I don't know that I would necessarily recommend this one, but it's called Casanova. It's streaming on Hoopla right now, which is the, I've actually been watching a few things on there. It's a streaming service that you can get through your library. It has like
Hoopla's great.
Yeah, good stuff. So seek out, you know, get a library card and check out some stuff there. It's all free. And it's a lot of times when I'm looking for things and they're not streaming on any of the streaming services that I pay for, they happen to be on Hoopla. So that helps out a lot.
Yeah, both Hoopla and Canopy typically have a lot of really good indie and art house selections that aren't commonly available on the other streaming services.
Yeah, I wanted to sign up for Canopy, but my local library doesn't use that one. So I'm kind of left out in the cold there, but at least they have Hoopla. So.
You can honestly, probably what you can do is you can like get a library card from like another library that does have access to it, even if like it's something that you apply for remotely. Because my closest library didn't have a connection to Hoopla, but a library like 20 minutes away did. And so I just called and they set up like a library card for me over the phone so that I was able to do it.
All right. Life hack. Excellent. Okay.
Yeah.
So while I wouldn't necessarily recommend Casanova, I would recommend rewatching or watching for the first time 1996's Twister.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on Twister, Brad?
I love going into the suck zone. It is. this is one of my favorite movies to come out of the mid 90s. I was obsessed with this movie when I was younger. For a time, it had me, I think a lot of people, super interested in tornadoes to the point where like I once entertained the idea of being a storm chaser.
Wow.
Yeah, like I was reading tons of books about tornadoes and things like that. But then I found out that if you want to be a storm chaser, you have to get really into weather, and that means science, and that means fuck that. but no, I love Twister. It's I wouldn't ever say like it's a it has like a good story or makes a lot of sense, but it's just a really fun blockbuster movie with a great cast and just really fun scenes.
I had not seen it in years. My parents owned it on DVD when I was growing up, and I feel like I saw it, you know, maybe two or three times or something when I was a kid, but I had forgotten like big chunks of this movie, and I loved it on rewatch. I had not seen it in a long, long time. I feel like, you know, one of the big dings that people might have looking back on it now is that the visual effects just look ridiculous. They're cartoonish and sort of goofy.
I mean, just the opening shot after the initial flashback scene is that shitty CG satellite floating over a terrible version of Earth in space.
Yeah, my wife and I were like, oh no, when that happened. We're like, is this where we were with CG in 1996? And then it kind of does this like transition thing out of that into like a screen at the National Weather Service or whatever the institute is, where like all the scientists are gathering around monitors and stuff. So I was like, oh, okay, I think maybe they're trying to say that was the display there, and that wasn't necessarily like the movie's picture perfect version of what the Earth actually looked like. But I don't know, it was a little maybe that was too generous, but so I don't know, I just like, I was not bothered at all by the goofiness and the sort of cartoonishness of the VFX, because it just kind of matched up with this movie's like gee whiz energy that it has. And I really just loved it. Like Bill Paxton and Helen Hunt are just perfect in the leads. The supporting cast is absolutely on fire. Like Chris came on the podcast not too long ago and talked about how much he loves this movie, even though he doesn't think it's a great movie. I'm trying not to repeat him too much, but like he was talking about Philip Seymour Hoffman and just like how many great character actors there are.
Alan Ruck.
Populating this cast. And they're all just like having so much fun. It's such, it's so great to see all of them. My biggest takeaway, I think, is that this movie is just like ludicrously propulsive in the best way. Like at one point, the characters encounter 4 tornadoes in a single day, like which is just like out of control.
Yeah.
And even the moments in between those big action set pieces are so chaotic and fun. And you're learning things about the characters, or like, getting a chance for the supporting cast to make jokes and crack wise. And it really makes you feel like you're a part of the crew, you know? My wife and I were talking about like how it feels like modern blockbusters don't really have characters talking over each other and finishing each other's sentences and stuff nearly as often as they did in this movie.
Yeah.
And I think it's a big part of the reason why Twister never feels like it has a lull in it. It's just always moving, you know? So there are some like really ridiculous things that happen near the end of the story. Like the moment where they drive through a house that's crashed on the street in front of them. But I just had a blast with this. I forgot how much I love this thing. So I'm excited about Twisters now, having, you know, just that I'm high from my rewatch, and I'm hoping that the sequel or whatever you want to call it, whatever terminology you want to use for Twisters, does not let me down. So where are you on Twisters? Are you excited for that one?
Yeah, I'm very excited. I think I'm trying to be a little more cautiously optimistic just because I do love the original so much. It does feel like that they have like the attitude right, and they have a good ensemble there. You know, Glenn Powell's fantastic, and the kind of character he's playing, like he's perfect for. So the one thing that I was a little put off by slightly is that they're making like a big deal of the soundtrack, kind of like how they did with the original, because the 90s were a time when like soundtracks were like a big deal for movies. And they've really leaned into like the country rock kind of vibe that the new movie seems to have, whereas the 90s movie really just had a general rock soundtrack to it. And so I'm a little like annoyed that like they're leaning into like to the countryside of it, but maybe it'll work. You know, we'll see.
Yeah, I'm right there with you.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Save big money at Menards. Never get locked out from lost keys again. Menards carries a huge selection of electronic lock sets. Get a TrueBolt touchscreen deadbolt that features one-touch locking and 50 programmable user codes. Available in matte black or satin nickel finishes, on sale now through September 8th at Menards. America's number one home improvement retailer for customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power. Visit jdpower.com for details and menards.com for deals.
Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Try Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost, built for WordPress creators by WordPress experts. With 100% uptime, incredible load times, and 24/7 WordPress priority support, your sites will be lightning fast with global reach. And with Bluehost Cloud, your sites can handle surges in traffic no matter how big. Plus, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. Get started now at Bluehost.com.
Save big money at Menards. We're your destination for concrete landscaping blocks. We have the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Get free estimates fast using our easy do-it-yourself landscape design program in-store or on Menards.com. Save big on landscape products at Menards, America's number one home improvement retailer for customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power. Visit JDPower.com for details and Menards.com for deals. Save big money at Menards.
Okay, what have you been watching, Brad?
I have been watching a couple DC movies that I dragged my feet on watching for obvious reasons. And that is Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom, the sequel to Aquaman. And this movie is just a mess. Just a real, real mess. It feels like they skipped the exciting like Thor Ragnarok reinvention that Thor went through and jumped straight to Thor Love and Thunder, which was just a real disappointment. I feel like they kind of let Jason Momoa go a little too hog wild and trying to make him a lot more like Chris Hemsworth's approach to Thor, because there is an amusing and pleasing aspect of Jason Momoa being more of like the laid back, you know, funny kind of bro superhero, you know, like we always have a good time saying my man and stuff like that. But but I feel like they kind of just let him go off the rails with this one, because it has a really hard time bridging like the silliness that comes from him trying to like raise a baby and like be a family guy, but then also be the king of Atlantis and like really tries too hard to dig into the comedy as far as like the sibling rivalry between him and Patrick Wilson's character. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I was just like, there's still a lot of really cool production design and world building and stuff. I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. Like, they made it look good. Like, James Wan knows how to make something that at least looks interesting. But yeah, it's just a mess. There's way too much going on, and it was pretty disappointing.
Yeah, I was hugely disappointed by it. I was like shocked at how brazen some of the imagery was in terms of it being lifted out of Return of the King, like the villain and stuff, like all of the green and everything. It was just like, man, you guys really you're really leaning hard on the Lord of the Rings on this one. But
for sure.
Okay, what about the other DC project?
I watched Shazam, Fury of the Gods. And man, any of the momentum that the first movie gave you going into this one is just like immediately sucked out of it. It looks way too fake. The entire sequence that happens on the bridge, where it's just like, oh, cool, you guys used all the green screens you had. I really hate like how some of these superhero movies just feel so artificial and fake to the point where like it's hard to look at, and there's a lot of that in this movie. You know, Zachary Levi is still pretty good as Shazam. He does a good job of capturing that teenage spirit, but the villains are like whatever. The action, it's the kind of thing where you feel like I've seen this superhero action before. There's nothing exciting about it. And the dynamic between the family as characters just didn't feel like it worked as well this time. I don't know if part of it is just like realizing, you know, like we're done with this and we're never gonna have to worry about these characters again. But I really liked the first Shazam. So, you know, I thought this, you know, this one had at least some potential, even though I hadn't heard a lot of good things about it. But yeah, a lot like Aquaman, it's just like, okay, well, we pretty much exhausted all of the goodwill we had going into these sequels.
Yeah. I'm so curious about what you think about this next movie that you're about to talk about.
Oh, If I Saw, which stands for Imaginary Friends. This is John Krasinski's movie, which is about a young girl who discovers the world of imaginary friends and tries to help them reconnect with either the kids that they were once imaginary friends with or new kids so that they can continue being imaginary friends. If she doesn't succeed, I don't know what happens to them. And that's one of the problems with the movie. And so Ryan Reynolds plays this this other guy who's a human who is seemingly the only other person who can also see these imaginary friends, and he's also trying to help them in the same way. And Steve Carell voices Blue, a big purple furry monster, and he does so in such an adorable way. And there's also an all-star cast voicing a bunch of other imaginary friends like Emily Blunt and John Stewart and Bradley Cooper and basically all of John Krasinski's friends that he called in favors for. This movie is extremely disappointing because there's a lot of potential here to do something really fun and cool as a family movie, but John Krasinski has a really hard time balancing the tone of a tearjerker that's like on par with a Monster Calls and the like comedic vibe of like a Who Framed Roger Rabbit or Ghost Town in like this fantastical world, you know, where there's an ensemble of characters that they're trying to help. And like there's imagination here for sure. There's a lot of inventive things, like the imaginary friends themselves, like their designs are really cool and unique and feel like something that kids, you know, would have come up with. But there's a real lack of attention paid to like defining how that world really works and like what it means to like to help them, you know, because it's he shifts partway through the movie and like the focus really ends up being on the main girl character because she's going through essentially like some post-trauma of her own, because in the very opening of the movie her mother, you see she's died, and so her father John Krasinski is about to go in to get surgery, and so she's just dealing with a lot of emotional stuff, and it starts to focus more on her resolving that grief and pain and dealing with that kind of thing. And it really feels like John Krasinski is working through some stuff, like as far as like dealing with the fact that his kids are growing up and he doesn't want them to forget about like the fruits of childhood and enjoying life while you can, while you're young, and that kind of thing. And it never coalesces into something that feels genuine enough to care about either half of the story. Like it just feels like it's pushing way too hard to be like, oh man, remember when you were a kid and things were a lot better, and like wouldn't it be just like so great to tap into that again? Like, yeah, it would, and you didn't do it. I'm sorry.
That's a shame. I kind of like John Krasinski.
I do too, you know, and I do think that he's a talented filmmaker. You know, I think both Quiet Place movies are good. I liked The Hollers when it came out. I don't know if you've seen that.
I haven't.
Yeah, it's a good little family dramedy that has a solid cast. But yeah, I just feel like he really missed the mark with this, because even if you want to go into this and like have a good time with the imaginary friends, pretty much all of the funniest stuff is in the trailer. And so like it makes the going to the movies to see it like kind of a joyless experience, because it not only is the movie more depressing than the trailer lets on, there aren't really any big surprises. There are a few like imaginary friends that they haven't shown off much in the trailer, but you also don't get enough time with such a large group of them to like give all of them like a fun standout moment. So like, yeah, it feels like they're kind of wasting such a big impressive cast without really giving them anything to like do.
Man, that's a bummer. All right, well, that's if it's in theaters right now still. And then you have been catching up with John Mulaney's Everybody's in LA. I don't know if you heard the episode of Slash Film Daily where I talked a little bit about this, Brad, but I've seen the first episode and I haven't caught up with anything else.
Okay.
What do you make of this show?
I really like this a lot. This aired during Netflix's Just for Laughs festival, and they actually did it live during the festival for six different nights while the festival was happening in Los Angeles. John Mulaney did the equivalent of a live talk show where he brought in comedians and then other assorted guests. And each episode had like a topic that they kind of played fast and loose with that was tied to something in Los Angeles, like palm trees or the paranormal and things like that. And what I really appreciated about this most is just kind of how haphazard it all was. And like, it really felt like the product of the classic talk shows that used to define like the 70s and the 80s, where there wasn't this constant like scripting and like publicity approach to late nights. Like, oh, you guys are going to talk about this, and this is where you're going to talk about the movie you're promoting, and this is where we're going to play a fucking game, and everyone's going to laugh because it's like, oh, isn't it so fun to see Chris Hemsworth eating Cheetos with his feet? I don't know if that's something that ever happened, but that's, you know, that's what Jimmy Fallon would do. But this was just like, it felt like an old school talk show that had a classic kind of like, oh, anything can happen because, yeah, it's live. And while they have a plan of things to do and they do have pre-recorded bits and like certain scripted things, John Mulaney just kind of let the conversation steer itself. And, you know, they had these live phone calls that came from people to talk about the various topics, and those played out however they happened. And it was really funny to kind of just see sometimes how it would like stall and get weird and be kind of chaotic. And so there were times where like it did feel like it could have used some honing and reining in here and there, because it gets a little unwieldy like in the middle of each episode for a little bit. But it was just so fun, and I liked seeing Mulaney in this element. And I really hope this is something that maybe they'll bring back in like a limited capacity where they just like do it every now and then, because I really had a good time watching this, and I would love to see more of it.
Yeah, I think he is exceptionally well suited to that role of being the sort of master of ceremonies and like having some space for a monologue and being able to tell his jokes and stuff, but also just like the improv of like, you know, keeping everything up and keeping everything afloat and like putting the entire show on his shoulders and just kind of like being the one like you said, he sits back enough and like lets the conversation go, but he also has to be the one to sort of rein it in wherever he can. So yeah, I don't know. There was so much awkwardness, Brad, in the moments where he let it go too long that I was like cringing as I was watching it in that first episode. So is there like a lot of that feeling throughout the remaining five?
Yes and no. Like there's definitely a lot more moments like that. Like there's one episode where one of the guests is like this a therapist who helped John Mulaney quit cigarettes, and he's kind of like this like one of those like new age kind of people where like the way he talks about stuff, like things like the paranormal and like addictions and things like that, is a very Los Angeles like kind of person that you would expect. And like the way like some of the comedians like are talking to him, especially Sarah Silverman and stuff like that, you can tell that he's like out of his element, and it's just he's just kind of a weird guy. So like, yeah, there's definitely things where like the conversations go in strange, awkward directions, and but it's I had fun with it, you know.
Okay, all right, well, that's called John Mulaney's Everybody's in LA. It's on Netflix right now, all 6 episodes. All right, let's get into the last section here, Brad. What have you been eating recently?
So obviously I talked about some stuff from Sweets and Snacks Expo, and so there's a couple things that I'll mention here that I also got to try there, but also some new things that are out that you can try yourself as well. So first thing I'm going to mention is Fruity Pebbles Candy Chews. These should be available now. You might be able to find them quickly at Five Below, but they should be like rolling out to various stores now and throughout the summer. And so these are basically like little chewy candy pebbles. They're a little smaller than Skittles, but they're not as small as Nerds. And they taste exactly like Fruity Pebbles cereal. I was surprised because I was expecting, oh yeah, sure, it'll have a fruity flavor, but like, will it really capture like the flavor of Fruity Pebbles, which has a very distinct yet general sugary fruity flavor to it. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, the candy tastes just like Fruity Pebbles. So good on them for capturing the taste of those Fruity Pebbles candy chews. They're from a company called Flicks Candy, and it's an official crossover with Post cereal. So if you can track those down, I think you can also buy them online if you don't want to try and find them in stores. So just do a search for those, and they're quite delicious.
Okay.
I also tried the new Sour Patch Kids Oreos. This is a real thing.
I don't know about that one, man.
Yeah, trust me, I didn't either. And your instincts are correct. One of my friends who is also like intrigued and likes to try new flavors of things got his hands on them before I did, and he told me that he liked them. So I was like, okay, well, let's see. And so I didn't want to buy a whole box of this one because I knew I probably wasn't going to enjoy them enough to like want to go back for more. And so he brought them over for me to try, and they're not as bad as I thought they would be, but the sour candy flavor just does not mix well. It's a golden Oreo, so it's not a chocolate Oreo, so that helps. I think if it was a chocolate Oreo, it would be infinitely worse. Mm. But because it's a golden Oreo, it's not terrible because it's kind of just like having like a fruity sour, you know, cake flavor. But there's when you get a good like chunk of like the Sour Patch Kids like crystals that are in the frosting, it's the sour mix flavor doesn't go well with a cookie or the cream that's in it. And so like, yeah. It was not a pleasing sensation to my taste buds.
I mean, when you've got like double stuff Oreos that just exist already, it's kind of like, why are we even trying to mess with perfection?
People are weird, you know. I mean, I'll try pretty much every new Oreo that ever comes out. So,
all right, what else?
So, have you ever had Cake Bites? Have you seen these in stores?
I've had cake pops like from Starbucks or something, but okay. I've never had a cake bite. No.
So cake bites are these little square bites of cake that are covered in like a frosting. They're kind of similar to like a ding dong or ho ho. There's no cream filling or anything like that, but they do have like flavored like stripes, I guess you could say, inside them. And so there are a bunch of different flavors out there that you can see in stores. And lately they've been doing a lot of collaborations, and that includes Girl Scouts cookies flavored cake bites. And if you do follow Brad's Junk or you just happen to pay attention to snacks, you'll notice that there are a lot of snacks that have been using the Girl Scouts flavor roster to inspire different new snacks lately, especially Thin Mints and Coconut Caramel, or Samoas as people know them. And so those are the two flavors that have been adapted into Cake Bites. They have Thin Mints and they have Coconut Caramel. And I got to try these at the Sweets and Snacks Expo. They should be available on shelves now. I've seen some people posting about finding them in Walmart and whatnot. And these are actually really good. I think that they might be my favorite flavor of Cake Bites. But of course, I'm a sucker for Thin Mints and Samoas because those are the two best Girl Scout cookies by far. And the flavor just mixes really well into the Cake Bites. They're soft. The frosting is really good. And yeah, just the flavors are good inside this form. So if you can find them, I recommend trying them.
Okay, and then you also had a chance to hit up Parlor Donuts, Brad.
Yeah, I mean, so you sung their praises when I was on the last water cooler that I was on, whenever that was, I don't know, 2 weeks ago, something like that. And I discovered that there was a Parlor Donuts just a half an hour from here. And so I went to check it out while I was on my way somewhere else one day and got a little batch of donuts. And holy crap, these donuts are so good. I got them fresh, and that's the best way to eat them. They're still good a day later, because I got like a half dozen so that I could have a couple the next day, and so that my mom could also try them as well. But yeah, man, if you get these fresh, like, you're right. They have like the texture of a croissant. There's like a little bit of crisp on the outside, but they're soft and flaky on the inside. They put like this powdered sugar cinnamon like mixture on a lot of them. I did get the churro one, like you had suggested, and that was mm-hmm. delicious.
Oh, so good.
They also had a seasonal banana cream pie one that I got that had some frosting and whipped cream on top with a little Nilla wafer, and then inside it had banana pudding for filling. That was delicious. I got the chocolate peanut butter cup one, which had chocolate and peanut butter frosting on top of it and a little bit inside for filling. But yeah,
was that one like too much? I've been like eyeing that one a little bit, but I've always been worried that it's going to be like, you know, sweet overload or something.
I didn't think so, but I also love chocolate peanut butter, so I'm never really overwhelmed by that. But like the donuts themselves are big enough that the amount of frosting that they put on doesn't really ever overwhelm the donut. And same with the ones that have filling in them either. Like it's never too much where you feel like you're just getting like a big glob of filling in your mouth. It's pretty evenly distributed with like the rest of the donut, so that it's never really overwhelming. So like I would try it if I were you.
Okay. Yeah. Cool.
But they were awesome.
I mean, it sucks that it's 30 minutes away, because I have one that's like 5 minutes away from my house or something. So is it going to be like working its way into your donut rotation, or is it just going to be like special occasions, or what do you think?
That's the thing, is like it's probably for the best, honestly. because it's a half an hour away, and because they close at 3, it's not the kind of thing where like I definitely need to like either already be going over there to like get some, or go out of my way to do it. So I probably won't get them super often, as much as I would probably like to, but knowing how good they are, like it'll probably be like a treat I get for myself every now and then.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've run a little bit long. I was going to read some more 5-star reviews. I'm going to save those for future episodes. But yeah, Brad and I definitely both recommend Parlor Donuts, which is Parlor. And I would Google them and check out their website that has like a bunch of lists of the locations and stuff all over the country. So that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find much more about a lot of the stuff that we talked about at slashfilm.com. I will try to link to a few things in the show notes as well. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Try Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost, built for WordPress creators by WordPress experts. With 100% uptime, incredible load times, and 24/7 WordPress priority support, your sites will be lightning fast with global reach. And with Bluehost Cloud, your sites can handle surges in traffic no matter how big. Plus, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. Get started now at Bluehost.com.